It might sound a little bit cheesy, but I'd like to thank the organizer for this organizing this workshop and, of course, inviting me. I'm going to talk about some relatively old work because quantum computing is a new field, but this dates from several years, so I think we can say that this is relatively old. This is joint work with Andrés Ambainis, Michele Mosca, and Ronald de Wolf. Most of the work was actually done while I was doing a postdoc with Michele in Waterloo. At that time, we were like two people, but I heard that this has changed. Three, maybe? No, we're two, I think, doing quantum computing. Am I right? Yeah. But now the group is huge. Okay, so the topic of this talk is about private key encryption. So, private key encryption, this is a very, 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 very old topic. And as all of you know, there have been like a struggle, a series of battles between the code maker and the code breaker. And at some point in history, the code maker were in advance. At some other point, the code breaker were in advance. But, well, what do you think is the most important result in public key cryptography? This is an easy question. Nah, come on. Seriously. I think the most important result, it's kind of obvious, is the Shannon result about unconditional security of private key encryption. So I suppose that all of you know about the one-time pad, and I also suppose that all of you know about entropy. But I got this on my slide because, you know, I want to refresh your memory and make clear that all of these concepts are very simple, okay? So, you know, the definition of entropy is easy. We can have conditional entropy. We can have two variables. And you have to work a little bit, but you can prove some nice properties of the nice relationship between these entropic values. Well, this is our toolbox. This was the toolbox of Shannon. And the one-time pad was already known, and it's totally trivial. It's so easy that, for example, when I like to do popularization talk, and you can explain the one-time pad in detail, and people will understand, because it's very, very easy. Especially if you want to encrypt only a one-bit information, like a yes or no question, then you can flip a coin on the table and people will understand that this is secure. Okay? So the intuitive security, for me, is the fact that once you see the ciphertext, any possible plain text as an explanation. But if you really want to prove security, you have to work a little bit more. So this is the one-time pad in complete detail. This is an example. As you see, this is very easy. But then you have to prove. You have to prove two things. So Shannon result is very interesting and very important. And the first part of the result was to show that if you have a key that is random and that is as long as a message, then you have unconditional security. So basically it means that if you have a hand bit message and you have a completely random n-bit key, then you have unconditional security. And the proof, especially now that we know a lot about entropy and we know how to use it and so on, the proof is extremely simple. You just need as an hypothesis that the entropy of the key is n-bit and the fact that you're using the one-time pad as a cipher. And then you can conclude these things, do some equation, and then you get that the entropy, which is the uncertainty about the message while you know the ciphertext, is just equal to the entropy of the message itself, so you don't learn anything. So it's easy to prove that n bit of key is sufficient. But then, another very interesting thing is to show that this is necessary, because otherwise people will keep trying to have unconditional security with shorter key. But we know this is impossible. This is another result of Shannon. And the proof is also very easy. I don't know I haven't read the original proof. Anybody of you have seen the original proof? Yeah, so is it hard? The original proof?
Proof is basically just a
few lines. Okay, that's good. So it was also easy at that time.
Actually, didn't use
it. Oh, okay. Yeah, my history of cryptography is not as good as it should be, maybe.
The probability, so when I teach crypto, I always explain it using state probability theory, a few lines.
Ah. Okay, okay. I'm sorry? Okay, well, we can go into some technical stuff, but if you assume that the key is completely random, no, I'm not talking about here I'm talking about the entropy of the key. Okay, so you need as much entropy as a message that you want to transmit privately. But of course, why use some strange probability distribution? But the result is that if you want unconditional security, whatever the scheme you're going to use, how clever you are, you need as much entropy in the key in order to privately and unconditionally securely transmit n bit of classical information. And you only need as assumption, once you know about entropy, you only need as assumption that, of course, what you want is that the entropy of the message, knowing the ciphertext and the key, must be zero. Well, it must be possible to read the message when you know the key. So you must not have some uncertainty. And also you want this to be secure, so you want the entropy of the message, knowing the key, not to increase. But using those two simple assumptions, everything follows up and you get that the entropy of the key has to be larger than the entropy of the message. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I assume that you know about that. So what I'm going to talk about now is something very, very similar. I want to send message privately. I want to use a classical key. But the message are going to be quantum state. So if you read this, you will see that there is a problem there, because what I claim, this is actually what I'm going to prove. But what I claim here is that if you want to send n bit of quantum information in an unconditionally secure way, okay, it is sufficient to have 2n bit of classical key. That should not pose any problem. You'll see this is kind of easy. But the statement is also that you must have 2n bit key. Okay, you must have 2n bit key, otherwise it's impossible to send privately n qubit. But you should see a problem there. Actually, if I don't add a comment, it's wrong. It's false. Okay, so what would be the problem with that statement? Okay, the problem is in the fact that you need 2n bit of key. So we can use some tools. All of you know about quantum cryptography. And what is quantum cryptography? How did it start? What is the starting point of quantum cryptography? It's QKD. And with QKD, you can exchange a key as long as you want. Okay, you have to start with something small. But you can exchange a key as long as you want. Okay, so you can start with a very small key, generate 2n bit of key, and then send your quantum message privately. So this statement seems to be wrong. But it's not wrong. I have to add a small comment. I'm not interested in interactive protocol. I don't want to have interaction back and forth between Alice and Bob, as you have in key distribution. If you want to do key distribution, you have to be connected, and you have to send message back and forth. And then you can generate a key as long as you want, and this is very useful. Why I'm not interested in having back and forth communication? Well, first, because the problem is solved. You can generate a key. This is known. But also because suppose that I am Alice and I am Bob. I don't have a split personality, but it's just that I want to encrypt some information for myself. I want to put it on my quantum hard drive. You can check on the web. There is some quantum hard drive, but anyway. I want to put the state on my quantum hard drive so that I can, you know, I can keep my hard drive in this room, go to the toilet and so on, and nobody will steal my quantum state. And when I come back, I want to decipher the quantum state and use it. So I'm both Alice and Bob. But the problem is that I cannot talk to myself back and forth in the past. Okay? So I'm interested in encryption which involve only a private key and one message to transmit the state. Yes. No, it's a quantum message. Okay, so the Shannon result is about sending classical information. Yeah, but you can use a classical key to generate those 2n bit and then send the quantum state. The statement here is that if you have 2n bit of key, this is sufficient. But when I... No, don't be sorry. This is a good question. So what I say here is that if you have 2n bit of key, this is sufficient. And then I say you need it. But if you have interaction, that's not true, because you can use QKD to generate that long key and then use it. But if you add the fact that I don't want to have interaction, then this is true. Yes? This is for perfect hiding, yeah. This is another drawback of using QKD. That's a good comment. Okay, so everybody understand what I'm trying to do here? I'm trying to show that 2n bit of key is sufficient and necessary in order to send a quantum state. But now I have a problem. Normally, I think it's a very good idea to motivate your work. So why would I want to encrypt quantum state? Anybody has a suggestion? Yeah, okay, I had the same problem. So why would I want to encrypt a quantum state? The thing is, right now, we don't have quantum computer, so we don't deal with large amount of quantum information and so on. So it's not obvious to find some application, but I can give you one application that to me is meaningful. Well, for example, classical information can be extremely important and you want to keep it private. So suppose I have the proof of some statement. So suppose I have a proof that P is different from NP, for example, or something like that. Or suppose I know the factorization of some of the large integer that RSA gives some $200,000 to factor, suppose I have some classical proof, then maybe I want to encrypt it because it's important to me. But now we know, and thanks to John Waters, now we know that the concept of having a quantum proof is meaningful. Of course, the definition was there. You know, you can imagine having a quantum proof of something, but now we know that there is some cases where you can have a quantum proof of some statement where there is no classical short proof that is known. So, for example, if I have a quantum proof for group non-membership of some element, maybe this is important to me. Maybe I want to keep that private and I want to encrypt it, either to send it to somebody or to keep it to myself. So this is the motivation. Okay. The slides are very technical, but as you can see, I'm not going to be extremely technical, but I want you to see that all of those definitions and all of those things, and especially the proof, are not that hard, because all the tiny detail of the proof will be on the slide. But I'm not going to go through the equation because it doesn't make sense, okay? So this looks ugly, but this is the definition. You need to have a right definition in cryptography. This is very important, okay? Sometimes people work for years in order to get the right definition. This slide is the same, but I think it's easier for me to explain it using this one. So you have Alice and Bob, and Alice wants to transmit a quantum state to Bob privately. What are the resources that they have? Well, the resources that they have is a private key that they both share. I don't see any reason not to have a uniformly distributed key. I've never heard of any encryption scheme whatsoever that is based on the fact that the key is not uniformly distributed. Okay? But I need that. Why? Because when I want to prove that you need 2n bit of entropy, I'm not going to assume anything. And in particular, I'm not going to assume that the key is uniformly distributed. Okay? But in all the example I will give, of course the key is uniformly distributed. I don't see any reason not to do that. So you have some key that is shared between Alice and Bob. The key can be seen, of course, as an integer. And then Alice is going to use the key. So the encryption scheme is very easy. Okay? What you do is that you take the quantum state that you want, and this is the most general thing you can do. You take the quantum state that you want to transmit. You're allowed to add up some dummy quantum state like an ancilla, you know, maybe it's going to help you. And then, of course, you have to do something reversible because you want Bob to be able to extract the information. So then what you're going to do is that depending on the key, you're going to do a unitary transformation on the original state plus the ancilla. Okay? So you have a bunch of unitaries. Since you have n minus 1 key, then you're going to have n minus 1 unitary transformation, one for each key. Okay? And then you have constructed rho prime. You transmit rho prime via the channel that is a public channel. And then, of course, it's obvious how to decrypt the state. You just do exactly the opposite, which is first you undo the unitary transformation, and then you get the state plus the dummy ancilla. You remove the ancilla, and you get the state. So the encryption scheme is very easy, okay? But I need some property in order to call it an encryption scheme. And the term I'm going to use is a private quantum channel, because you might have different kind of private quantum channel. So this is going to define a private quantum channel. So in order to, just a second, in order to call it a private quantum channel, I must have some other information available in order to guarantee that this is secure. Yes?
So, one variation that one can probably see is that the ancilla there can change according to the key.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm going to address that.
Yeah. And also, like, I mean, there might be more general things possible. So exactly, like, can you move from the speaker, please?
I didn't know I was the cause of that. Okay, so let me address the first question, and then maybe you can ask the second one. Having an ancilla that depend on the ancilla cannot depend on the state, because when you transmit a state, you don't know it. But if the ancilla depends on the key, you can move that into the unitary transformation. Depending on the key, you do the unitary transformation on the state and the ancilla. Okay? So if you want to have a different ancilla for each key, well, you put that transformation of the original ancilla into the unitary transformation. I don't know exactly how to define everything you can do. Okay? I don't know exactly how to define everything you can do. So, well, basically, this is what you can do. Yes?
But this, what you can do would keep it only one copy, right? If you have more than one copy of some information, then you can do something else.
Oh, yes. Of course. One important assumption here is that in order for this to work, you don't need to have any information about the quantum state. Maybe you really don't know what the state is, and you want the encryption scheme still to work. Yes?
So your paper to Raman's question, to move the construction of a key dependent ancilla into the unitary, would work only if you allow pure ancillary.
Yeah. I know, I was hoping nobody would notice. Yeah, okay. So I'd like to have a discussion with you in having the right definition of anything you can do. So, of course, you can say that this is any PUVM, and not any PUVM, any super operator and so on. But you have to be careful because it has to be possible to decipher the state. Okay? So I thought I would go under time, but definitely I'm not going to go under time. But, okay, let's agree right now that this is my model. Okay, that the only thing you're allowed to do, okay, is to add up a dummy state and do a unitary transformation. And believe me, this is very, very general. Okay? I don't have any serious counterexample to that. Another question?
Yeah, it's related, I guess. Why does the encryption operation have to be the same as the encryption operation with reverse? Why couldn't Bob do a beat data?
Okay, again, it has to be reversible. So you want to be able to... So I'm only defining the encryption. The encryption has to follow this rule. And if you follow this rule, then the decryption is obvious. You just undo it. Okay? And also, I want this to be perfect. This is important. I want this to be perfect. I don't want to have an approximation of the state. I don't want to tolerate error or anything like that. If you use a perfect quantum channel to transmit the state, then I want Bob to have a perfect copy. Well, this is maybe a little bit too much to ask. Like other people say, tolerating very, very, very small error is reasonable. Okay, but in this model, everything is perfect. Okay, good. I can continue. So this is the formal thing. So what is a private quantum channel? A private quantum channel is defined as a set of states. First, what do you want to transmit? This is publicly known. So you have a set of states. Okay, maybe you want to send any quantum state, but maybe you want to limit yourself to classical information or some kind of quantum information. So you have a set of state. And then you have the set of unitary transformation that depends with the probability associated to it. This probability associated with the unitary transformation is just the distribution of the key, of the possible key. Then you have this ancilla that is fixed and known to everyone. And then you have rho zero. Rho zero is extremely important. Rho zero is actually what E is going to see. Okay? So what would be a very, very simple definition of security when you use a private quantum channel? The obvious and good enough definition would be whatever you send, Eve is always going to see the same thing. Okay? The state that Eve is going to see going through the channel, of course, Eve doesn't know the key. So assuming that Eve doesn't know the key, Eve is always going to see the same state whatever you send. So this is a very strong definition of security. This is the right one. Okay? Because we can achieve that. So in my definition of a private quantum channel, I have the set of states, the set of unitary transformation and the key, the fixed ancilla, which in practice will never be used, but I'm going to use it to prove that you need to embed a key, because you don't know in advance. Maybe it's useful. Now we know that it's not useful, but maybe it could be useful. And then you have this rho zero. And this rho zero is the state that Eve always sees. So you just assume that no information is known about the key. So what Eve is going to see is, well, some fixed state, okay, with a random key. And it's always going to be rho zero. And it's not obvious that we can achieve that, but this is our objective. Okay, I'm going to give you some simple examples. So the first example I'm going to talk about is, well, oh, okay, this is easy, but this is a good question. Is the one-time pad secure in the quantum world? I mean, everything changed in the quantum world. Things are different. And I'm sure you believe me, things are sometimes weird. Okay? There's good thing, but there's also bad thing in the quantum world. So is the one-time pad secure in the quantum world? Well, the answer to that is quite easy. I'm going to only to focus on the one bit for the moment. You want to send one bit alone of classical information. So you know about the Pauli matrices, okay? I'm just giving them names. So suppose that the set of state you want to send is classical information, a bit equal to zero, a bit equal to one. And this is known by the eavesdropper. Okay, the eavesdropper, as usual, knows everything except the key. Well, this is easy to do. We're just going to use the one-time pad. So the one-time pad is we're going to use with probability 1f, Alice is going to do nothing, which means not flip the bit. With probability 1f, Alice is going to flip the bit. Okay? What is the entropy of the key? It's one bit. And what is the state that is always going to be seen by the eavesdropper? Well, it's the identity, the completely mixed state. And this is very easy to show. If you encrypt 0, then it's going to be the identity. And if you encrypt 1, then it's going to be the identity. So this is perfectly secure if you want to send one bit of classical information and you need one bit of key. This is a good news. Now a more tricky example. Suppose that what you want to send is really quantum. The set of state is finite. There's only two states you want to send. But it's really quantum because they are not orthogonal. So the state you want to send is 0 and the plus state, okay, atom R of 0. I'm using W for atom R, not to confuse with entropy. Well, can you do a private quantum channel that is capable of sending these two states with perfect security? Yes, it's possible. And again, the entropy of the key is going to be one bit. But the transformation you're going to apply is not going to be the identity and the negation. It's not going to work. If you use identity and bit flip, this is not going to work, okay? Because you're not going to have always the same density matrices. But if you use identity and Adamar, then everything is fine. Because whatever you send, a 0 or 0 plus 1, it's always going to have the same density matrices seen by the eavesdropper. So one bit is sufficient in order to encrypt these two orthogonal states, non-orthogonal states. And of course, the question is, can we work with infinite sets? Is it possible to send over the channel some state which belongs to an infinite set? For example, the set of all possible states over n qubits. Well, before going to the set of all possible states, let me give you a nice example. Suppose that what you want to send on your channel, okay, is going to be any state with real amplitude, any qubit, only one qubit with real amplitude. So this is an infinite set, but this is not the most general case for a qubit, of course. So this is an infinite set, cos theta 0 plus sine theta 1 for any theta. And it's still possible to do the encryption with only one bit of key. And what you're going to use is identity and sigma y. Is it the right thing? Well, the matrices that this one here. And I don't have time to explain the details, but what you're going to end up with is that whatever state you send, the eavesdropper is always going to see the identity. Okay? Remember, in the previous example, it's not the identity here. The eavesdropper always see the same state. Okay, that's good. But it's not the completely mixed state. It doesn't have to be the completely mixed state. It has to be always the same state, but not necessarily the completely mixed state. And the last example, which is very important, is what if you want to send any qubit? One qubit, but any qubit. Well, then, as the theorem says, the theorem that I'm not going to prove because I don't have time, but the theorem I have stated says that you need two n bit of key to send one qubit. Okay? So in the previous example, it was not the most general case, and one bit of key was enough. But in general, two bit of key are necessary. Okay? And basically, I don't think you're going to be surprised, to encrypt one qubit, you just apply a random Pauli operator. This is exactly like teleportation. Before you receive the two classical bits in teleportation, what you have is a state that is exactly a copy of the original state, but with a random Pauli matrix applied to it. But this doesn't help you. Of course it doesn't help you, because otherwise it will enable you to communicate faster than the speed of light or anything like that. So using a random Pauli matrix is enough. But you need two bits of key. Okay, I only have 10 minutes left. So, one observation. It's actually Michele that notices that. One observation is the fact that very often, the state that is going to be seen by the eavesdropper is going to be the completely mixed state. Why? Because if you don't use any ancilla in your coding scheme, in your encryption scheme, if you don't use any ancilla and you are allowed to send the completely mixed state, then the view of the eavesdropper will always be the completely mixed state. You don't have to send it, but if you have the possibility to send the completely mixed state, it implies that the eavesdropper will always see the completely mixed state. Okay, so I have 10 minutes left. I'm not sure it's a good idea to go through the slide, but let me tell you a little bit the idea there. So in order to prove that you need, well, first, in order to prove that 2 n bit is sufficient, well, you have to work a little bit. With a one-time pad, it's easy. If you can encrypt 1 bit, then you can encrypt 2 bit, then you can encrypt 3 bit, and you can go on. Because classical bits are independent in some sense. Okay? They're not entangled. Okay, let me be more precise. They're not entangled. So suppose I have a private quantum channel that can send 1 qubit. Or then let's say I have 2 quantum channels, maybe the same definition, but I have 2 quantum channels that both can send 1 qubit. What if I want to send 2 qubit? Well, of course, if I want to send 2 qubit, which are not entangled, it's obvious. I'm going to use these 2 channels independently, and they are secure independently, so everything is fine. But what if I want to send entangled state? Well, entanglement is, first, it's important, and second, it's sometimes it's tricky, but it's possible to prove a concatenation lemma. This lemma will say the following thing. If you have 2 quantum channels, each of these channels can send, let's say, k qubit. Okay? They can be 2 copies of the same channel if you want, but you have 2 quantum channels that can send k qubit. K can be 1 to start with. Okay? Well, what you can do is that you can send a large state, which is entangled, by doing the concatenation of the 2 channels without modifying the channel. So, for example, if you want to send 2 qubit, and those qubit might be entangled, it's okay to use 2 times the private quantum channel for 1 qubit independently on each of these 2 qubit, and it's going to be secure. But you have to work a little bit, because it's not necessarily the case. You have to prove it. But fortunately, it works. So since we have the concatenation lemma, what it means is that if you want to send n qubit, you just have to use this very, very, very simple channel n times. And whatever the state you want to send is going to be okay. It's going to be completely secure. Okay? So now that we have this concatenation lemma, we know that it's possible to send n qubit using 2 n bit of key. This is possible. So, but that's the easy part. Okay? The important thing is that you need 2 n bit of key. It's not very hard, but it's a little bit more tricky than just applying a random polymatrices. You have to show that whatever technique you use, whatever you do, how clever you are, you're not going to be able to send quantum information privately using less than 2 n bit of key. And I'm a computer scientist, first of all. I've done some work in physics, quantum computing, and so on. But first of all, I'm a computer scientist. And in computer science, we like reductions. I like reductions. I think it's very interesting. It's a very nice proof technique. Okay? So the way we're going to prove that, the way we have proven that, is by using a reduction. Okay? So what is the idea? I want to show that you need 2 n bit of key in order to send n qubit. Well, first I'm going to concentrate into the classical case. Okay? So first, the idea is to show that even in the quantum world, Shannon's theorem is still true. Okay? This might look obvious, but you have to work a little bit. So even in the quantum world, if I want to send you n classical bits, I need n bit of key. But this is not surprising. Okay? This is not surprising. If you want to send n classical bits, even if you have quantum state, unitary transformation, ancilla, and so on, you need n bit of key. This can be easily proven. So this is the basis. If you want to send n classical bit, you need n bit of key. And the way we're going to show that, the way we have shown that you need 2 n bit of key when you want to send quantum state is going to be a reduction, a nice reduction. What we're going to say is, we're going to say, well, assume for that we have some quantum channel, and that this channel can, you know, transmit n qubits. This is the assumption. We have a quantum channel that can send n qubits. So what we could prove is that if you have a quantum channel that is perfect and that can send n qubits, well, you can use it to send 2n classical bits. Okay? So therefore, since we know that to send 2n classical bits, you need 2n bit of key, therefore, you need 2n bit of key to send a quantum state. And the idea is very, very simple. The idea is very, very simple. So suppose I have a private quantum channel to send 1 qubit, and I want to send 2 classical bits. What am I going to do? Any suggestion? Yeah, exactly. I'm going to do something like that. So if I want to send 2 classical bits using 2 qubits, well, I can use the standard bases, 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1. Okay. But I can also use the Bell bases. Psi plus, psi minus, phi plus, phi minus. These are 4 orthogonal states. They are legitimate. If I sent you 2 qubits, I can perfectly convey 2 bits of classical information using that specific basis. But what is interesting with that basis is that if you only see 1 qubit, you don't have any information. If I sent you one of the 4 Bell states, but you only see 1 of the 2 qubits, you don't have any information, because in every of the 4 cases, this single qubit is the completely mixed state. So if you only see 1 qubit, you don't have any information. So what am I going to do with the other qubit? I'm going to encrypt it. So if I want to send 2 bits of classical information privately, and I only have a private quantum channel for 1 qubit, well, I'm going to encode my information into 1 of the 4 Bell states, and this is known by everyone, of course by Bob, but also by the eavesdropper. Yeah, I'm Alice right now. So I'm going to encode in 1 of the 4 Bell states. I'm going to send the first qubit, you know, without any encryption or worried or anything, because this first qubit doesn't convey any information. This first qubit is always the completely mixed state. When you trace out half of an EPR pair, you always get the completely mixed state. So Eve doesn't get information. But then, of course, if I send the second qubit in the clear, then everything is ruled out. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to encrypt the second qubit. So this reduction, roughly, or, I mean, I didn't go into the detail, but this reduction shows that if you have a perfect channel for n qubit, you can perfectly send 2n classical bits. And there is another lemma that says to send n classical bits, Shannon was also right in the quantum world, to send 2n classical bits, you need 2n bit of key. And therefore, to send n qubit, you need 2n bit of key. Okay, I'm sorry, I've been a little bit sloppy, but I prefer to have questions and to be a little bit more informal. My slides are terrible, okay? I hate when people do that. But I knew that I would not go into the detail of the proof. These are very, very, very detailed proof, which means that they're not very difficult. You just have to follow the equation one line, let's see. You just have to follow the equation one line after the other, and the proof is done. I think there's less detail in the paper than there is on those slides. So the slides are going to be available, so you're welcome to look at it if you want to know more detail about this result. So is there any questions? I think I'm on time, am I right? Okay. No, 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 you don't need to have an equally distributed key. So, for example, you can... No, no. You can use a key that is not uniformly distributed, but you know the distribution. I can encrypt. For example, I can encrypt one classical bit using two bits of key, which are not random. With probability 1/2, I have 0/1. With probability 1/2, I have 1/1. With probability 0, I have 0/0. And probability 0, I have 0/1. I mean, I can invent some tricky distribution, and there's no problem. I can use it. Or I can even use compression in order to get this entropy on several qubits. And no, I'm right. I'm wrong. Okay, that I can agree. It's like what I said in the talk. I mean, you have to work a little bit in order to get the detail. But
it's
the it's not always possible?
It's not always possible.
Okay. Well,
I don't know the details. I know that those that have worked together have lots of papers on this, so you can interpret.
Okay, so let me address this issue here. I don't know any encryption scheme that doesn't use uniformly distributed key. Okay? When you use private key encryption, I'm not talking about public key, I'm talking about private key encryption. You use a uniformly distributed key, but, if you want to prove that you need 2n bit of key or 2n bit of entropy, if you want to prove that, you don't want to put limitation on the scheme. You want the scheme to be as general as possible. So all the four examples that I gave use a uniformly distributed key, and they don't use any ancilla. I don't see the point of using an ancilla, and I don't see the point of using a non-uniformly distributed key. But when I want to prove that you cannot do better, well, I have to give all the freedom to the players. So I give them lots of freedom. First, they can use a key that is not uniform, and it's not going to help them. Second, they can use an ancilla, but it's not going to help them. But I have to give that to the player, because otherwise the statement will not be very relevant, because somebody can say, well, you know, in your model, you need to end it as key, but it's very easy to imagine another model where you would need something else. Yes? Yeah, but it's better if they are. It's interesting because usually I give these talks to quantum computer scientists and not a crypto audience, so I have very interesting feedback there. Yeah, if you have as many keys as plain text. We are not actually 100% satisfied. I'm not 100% satisfied with this slide here, which is the same as in the paper. That the only thing you can do. Well, anyway, that the only thing you can do is add up an ancilla and do unitary. I don't think it's pedagogically a good idea, but I don't know exactly how to present it because everything we thought of is taken care of. But you can have some tricky stuff, like, for example, you use an ancilla, but you trace part of it. But if you trace part of it and then you send the rest, all the information must be in the rest. So this means that this is equivalent not to tracing out something. That you can send it all the way along, or you can change your unitary transformation and so on. So I'm not completely satisfied with the way we present it, the fact that it's the most general thing. And we're open to a pedagogical suggestion. Yeah. Yeah, other people have, well, I have a very, very, very short attention span. So I jump from topic to topic. Cryptography is not my specialty. I've done several things. But people were interested into this work. And the next speaker, yeah. And the next speaker is going to talk about that. So there is some different things you can do, some different model and so on. You can take care of errors and things like that. You can put bounds. This is presented as perfect security, like in the Shannon theorem, perfect security. So for example, if you know that the state you're going to send is not entangled with the eavesdropper, then things can be done with less key. You know, if you change things, if you relax the assumption that this must be perfect, if you really trust the eavesdropper, oh no, she's not entangled with the state, well, again, you can do some other stuff and so on. But strictly speaking, if you don't have any hypothesis on the state you want to transmit and you want it to be perfectly secure, then there's nothing you can do.
So, last one. I wanted to observe that if in your D, I mean, there were some people talked about locally informed generation of D for the classical 1x1. If the bits that your random generator generates are independent of each other, okay, then von Neumann pointed out that basically if you have on average 2 times n instead of n, that then you can extract uniform randomness.
Okay, but you can extract some.
Envy. At least envy.
Okay, but the entropy of each bit must be I. I mean, they're not uniform, but the entropy of each individual bit must be I.
What happens is the following. You're going to look at 2 bits. If the 2 bits are 0, 0, you throw them away. If the 2 bits are 1, 1, you throw them away. If you have 0, 1, or 1, 0, then they're going to occur essentially with the same probability. So the condition probability that this happens are half.
Oh, I see. Okay. I know this trick on some, yeah, using in some other context, but I know that trick. Yeah. If you want to flip a random coin, with a bias coin. Thank you for all the question and comments. This is very interesting. I'm using the entropy because I like using the entropy. But great, give me 10 more seconds and I let you go for coffee or anything. Just 10 seconds, okay? I'm not using I'm using von Neumann entropy in the proof. We are using von Neumann entropy in the proof, but the security does not talk about entropy. The security is just based on a very, very simple observation. The eavesdropper always see the same thing. Whatever you send, the eavesdropper always see the same thing. So this is not about entropy, this is not about probability, this is just perfect security. Okay, let me run away. Yeah, to be honest, I'm very surprised. I didn't thought that.
Okay, so our next speaker is Ashley Meyer. Speak about improvement of approaching the degree of quantum.
No, I don't want to keep this. Change. Is that the width of the screen? Yeah, let me just try. This is going to be a challenge. Let's see if I can see. Oh man. No, not quite. So this is, I have the computer on the least resolution. I don't know what else to do. Any suggestions? Oh, okay. In the space that's being projected, all right. That's a good idea. You mean the display? Okay, maybe, okay. Let's try that. I don't know which one to take, but let's see. This might work as well. Good. All right. Okay, maybe we shouldn't spend too much time on this. I'll try one last thing. Maybe that'll work. No, sorry.
Why don't you give the presentation this way?
Yeah, I don't know how to. Let's see. Maybe I can use page down or something to flip through. Yeah. Thanks. Okay, so I'll stick to this. I'll be talking about approximate encryption scheme, so it's a natural continuation of Alain's talk, and I'll explain what this means. This is partly some stuff I did with a student, Paul Dickinson, and mostly, or rather, the topic is
or what I'll present, I guess, will be some ongoing work with Leonard that is just hot off the stove. So Alan explained what encryption of quantum states means, so thankfully I don't have to go over all that again. He showed you a scheme for encrypting quantum bits, in particular the case of one quantum bit. So if you have any mixed state row, any single qubit mixed state row, one way to encrypt it would be to somehow map it to the completely mixed state. To the completely mixed state on average over some distribution over your private keys. Right? And the particular scheme that he, or one scheme that he showed you, was to pick a random Pauli matrix, one of four single qubit Pauli matrices, and to apply that to the state that you wanted encrypted. And he didn't quite show it to you in great detail, but he had it on his slide, that this operation of hitting your state with a random Pauli matrix actually maps it to the completely mixed state when averaged over all the four Pauli matrices. So my talk will be in the same vein as Alliance, and I'll be focusing on the amount of private randomness that you need to encrypt.